Welcome to another Scouting Post podcast. This is your host, Scouting Post founder, Kirk Ludeke. Hope you're doing well. Hope you had a happy new year. I am reprising something I did a year ago in which I took the annual prospects, Boston Bruins prospects rankings that I do for New England Hockey Journal every year and have done so since the 2000-2001 season and kind of break it down. So it was a long article, but ranking the prospects in two lists, both pro side and amateur side, it occurred to me that a year ago that I might be well served by going on and doing an audio companion file for that breakdown. And so I wanted to do that. I wanted to do two separate podcasts, one for the pros and one for the amateur. And this year, or at least this time, I'm kind of tongue-tied tonight. I apologize for that. But this time I'm going to start with the amateurs. And instead of starting at one, which if you've read my article, there's really no suspense here. You know who my top ranked players are. I'm going to start up at the top of 10. But before I hit the 10th player, I do want to kind of throw in a plug for number 11 because it was very close this year, and I actually went to a very trusted NHL scouting source and very good friend of mine to kind of help me out because I was torn between putting one guy inside the top 10 and him getting his own capsule and the other player not making it, and then the inevitable second guessing of, well, what's wrong with this guy? I thought he was a top player, but so on and so forth. In the end, my source and friend gave me some good advice and felt that the player that we ultimately ended up choosing to be the 10th ranked prospect on the amateur list had a larger body of work and therefore had earned that little extra nod, and that the number 11 guy who's brand new to the organization has time to kind of go out and prove himself. Now, some will say, hey, that, what's that? The reality is, look, the way I do these rankings, they're pretty subjective at the end of the day. Just to share you a little background on what I do, I study a ton of film. I talk to sources inside the Bruins organization, outside the Bruins organization. I talk to other scouts. I talk to fellow players. I talk to coaches. They give me insights on the players. I do the film study, and ultimately I rank them. But there is no quantitative analysis or formula that I do to plug these numbers in. I just kind of go with a gut feel. So in this case, our number 11 player who just missed the cut is getting some attention at the World Junior Championship. That's great. That's what's key to know is that I turned this story in about 3 weeks ago, well before the World Junior Tournament started. So who knows, if I had seen Ryan Lindgren doing what he's doing for Team USA in Toronto, maybe he would have been 10, but ultimately he just missed the cut. He's honorable mention. Call him 10A. He's a very good prospect. Defenseman with some real mobility and wheels, and plays with a lot of jam and bite. He was player of the game in a big win over Canada in the Group B final game on New Year's Eve. USA won 3-1, and Lindgren just was tremendous. He blocking shots, killing off a couple of five-on-three situations where the Americans could have been under the eight ball. They got very good goaltending from Joseph Woll. Certainly Jordan Greenway could have been player of the game, but I think it says a lot that Ryan Lindgren of the University of Minnesota was named player of the game. I think he's been good this tournament. It's been an excellent exposure for him. He's been up and down in terms of his playing time, but he's been getting more and more as Coach Bob Motzko and the staff has gotten put more trust in him. Again, he's an excellent fit for Canada because he's heavy, very tough to play against, real good skater, not a big point producer, and we certainly haven't seen that from him yet as with the Golden Gophers this year as a freshman, a true freshman, but he does have the mobility and he can chip in on offense. I think he's going to be one of these just solid middle of the roster complimentary guys who brings a lot of leadership, a lot of character, and a bite to his game. And so Bruins fans are right to be excited about him. If you're looking at the list and saying, what about Ryan Lindgren? How come he's not in the top 10? There's your answer. I hope I gave you enough to sink your teeth in. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and get on it so that this podcast doesn't run too long. We've got at number 10, Ryan Fitzgerald. And this is a player that I think a lot of times doesn't get enough respect, and it's got to be kind of maddening for him and people that are behind him and supporting him. You know, his uncle is a Bruins scout, you know, been in the organization quite a few years. Scott Fitzgerald's Tom's Fitzgerald's younger brother, who, as you know, Ryan is the eldest of Tom Fitzgerald's hockey playing sons. He was drafted in the fourth round of 2013 draft, 120th overall. That was a really good bargain pick for the Bruins. I remember seeing Fitzgerald ranked typically in many cases in the second round. And to get him in the fourth round was excellent. But it was also kind of reflective of his stock falling off a little bit over concerns due to a lack of ideal NHL height and skating ability. You know, it's tough to say he's not a bad skater, but when NHL clubs are looking at players that are about 5'10 and, you know, hovering around 5'10 and maybe a little under, they want to see some more explosiveness burst into the short areas and the agility. And that's not to say Ryan Fitzgerald doesn't have it, but it doesn't necessarily jump out at you. Where he excels and thrives is in a couple of areas. One, his hockey IQ is off the charts. He's just a really smart player. He's feisty and aggressive, very tenacious forechecker, separates opponents from pucks and is opportunistic. He also, you know, plays with a burr under his saddle. I think he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder because he's heard the doubters and people not believing he's got what it takes to go all the way. So I think Ryan Fitzgerald probably, and if the Bruin system was a little leaner, he'd be much higher on the list. But he's one of these players that he's been extremely productive in all 3 years at Boston College playing for Jerry York. He's getting tremendous coaching there. He's really refined his game. Again, he's got the potential to be a real strong defensive two-way forward like his dad was. His father was a first-round pick in 1986, went on to play more than 1,000 NHL career games. He's now the assistant general manager of the New Jersey Devils, has a Stanley Cup ring for his time with the Pittsburgh Penguins when they won in 2009. Just a strong, strong hockey family. And then Ryan's younger brother, Casey, was just drafted in the third round of the draft in Buffalo this past June. So it's a great family, and he's a good kid. And I think you'll see him sign with the Bruins this spring, and he's going to go into the pros. And the last thing I would say about him is, you know, looking at the kind of player he was in Malden Catholic, was a, you know, an elite D1 Mass high school player. And then he went off to the junior warriors of the NP or USPHL, and, you know, played junior hockey before he went to Boston College. And I don't think, you know, very many people doubted he was going to be an impact performer at the NCAA level. We kind of all expected this from them. He's just one of these really high end offensive players at that, you know, at the lower levels of high school and junior, and we expected that to translate. The question for him is going to be, can he get it and be that impact guy at the highest level when he starts getting into the pro hockey and AHL, and then eventually will probably work his way up to the NHL because he's just got a, you know, terrific work ethic and hustle and everything. So wish Fitzgerald the best. I think he's underrated. 10th. The thing about this list is once you get past the top player, I think your two to ten prospects on this list are all very close. You could jockey for position, you know, as far as five or six spots at either end, and have the guys on the lower end of the line be higher and vice versa. So that's certainly the case with Ryan Fitzgerald, and I certainly wouldn't read too much into the fact that he's 10 as opposed to six or seven or maybe even five. It's just, there are so many other players that have been successful in the system and have played their way up the ladder as well. Speaking of a trend in the reverse direction, our number nine player is a bit of a surprise, defenseman Jeremy Lauzon. Now, look, I don't want to make anyone believe that I'm down on this player. I'm not. He is, bottom line up front, still a player that I think the Bruins did extremely well in drafting in the second round of 2015. He doesn't have any discernible flaws in his game. He's big, but not huge. I mean, we're talking about 6'1", pushing 6'2". He's probably going to play at 210, 215, which is fine for the NHL. I mean, it's not Brandon Carlo size, but it's certainly not undersized either. Skates well. I mean, he's not a He's not a dynamic Scott Niedermeyer type skater on defense, but he's certainly fluid and mobile. I mean, his transitions are improving. He's a little slushy on some of his pivots and turns and changes of direction, but you know, in the open ice and his crossovers, he's pretty good. Good puck mover, passes the puck well, skates with his head up, can make those outlet passes, get back in retrieval and move it to the right option, to the right spaces on the ice and kick that transition game and attack up the ice. And he's a good shooter. Now, people forget in his draft year, he led all first-year Quebec League draft eligibles with 15 goals that year. That was more than Thomas Chabot. It was more than Jakub Zboril. And then last year, he was on pace for similar numbers if he hadn't been injured. But that's why he's number nine. He's had a lot of injuries that have cost him a lot of time going back to last season. He's missed 30-plus games, counting last year and this year. And so it isn't so much that Lauzon's stock is on the decline as it's other players have played more and been able to establish and assert themselves. And I'm really impressed with the way he's bounced back in the World Junior. He kind of has been the fifth wheel. I thought Cale Clegg has gotten a lot of ice time that I'm not sure was all that warranted. I think Lauzon has been a better player. He certainly made the most of his ice time. I had a very good game against the Czechs here the other night in Canada's win in the quarterfinal. They were moving on to the semis. Scored a memorable goal against Slovakia, a game winner and a shutout where he drove the net and took the puck and just wired it upstairs. I mean, just good, solid player. He's not dynamic. He's not flashy. He's not sexy. He was drafted 52nd overall, but this is a guy who's just steadily improved his stock. He's just nine, whereas a year ago he was fourth on my amateur list, and that's a reflection of the missed time due to injuries and little questions about his durability. But I'm sure his World Junior play is opening some eyes and going a long way to infusing him with some confidence. Okay, number eight, bit of a controversial name, Trent Frederick, center, University of Wisconsin Badgers. I don't think I need to rehash the 2016 draft and the fact that the Bruins quote-unquote reached and taken this guy 29th overall. I certainly didn't help at all when the pick was made, and I'll admit, I didn't see it coming. It would not have been my selection. I said that at the time, but it is what it is. He's done pretty well, and it's kind of silenced the critics and the doubters for now with a really strong 12 points in his first 10 college games performance. This is a guy who the Bruins admitted was more of a need selection based on filling some holes that they felt like were really lacking in their organization, namely with size and ability up the middle. He's a good solid 6'2", 6'3". He's putting on weight. The biggest positive about Trent Frederick, when you talk to different coaches who have either coached him or coached against him, or were coaches trying to recruit him onto their team, he is just a tremendous athlete. He excels in hockey, obviously, but he's also a star football and baseball player. So he has this natural, freakish athletic ability, apparently, that should only serve him well going forward as he continues to develop his game and develop an offensive spark that some of us just didn't see at the under-18s because he was playing through a hand injury. He's a mature leader character guy. I know some folks are disappointed that he wasn't on Team USA this year. I think he's probably pretty much a cinch to make next year's team. From what I was told, he had a hand injury again. He missed some time, and USA could have brought him, but they just felt like they were set at the center position enough to the point where they didn't want to put him in a position where he might be forced back into that kind of level of competition too early, and they weren't sure whether he would even be, even make the team. So rather than do that, they made the decision to send him back to Madison, back to the University of Wisconsin, where he could focus on school and focus on really playing a pretty standout campaign as another true freshman, similar to Ryan Lindgren. And this is a guy that, if you look at the highlight videos of him so far, he's scoring goals in a variety of ways. He's going end to end. He's crashing the net, banging in rebounds, using his big size to block out, protect the puck, box out, establish a net front presence. He can score. He can score those one-footed goals off the rush. He can generate pretty decent speed through the neutral zone and put defenders on their heels. Pleasant surprise. I thought coming into the season we'd be lucky that, if he was just a fourth liner with maybe third line upside who might get 10 to 15 points tops the entire year. He's already got 12. I think he's going to be a key performer for Wisconsin going forward. And like I said, you'll see him on Team USA next year. He's just a good player. And maybe the Bruins knew what they were doing after all. And you know, we can always continue to disagree about, you know, who might have been better options at 29. But you keep hearing the David Backes comparison from different people. I mean, Frederick idolized Backes growing up in St. Louis when Backes was in his prime playing for the Blues. And if the Bruins can get a fraction out of a young David Backes out of Frederick, I think they'll be pretty happy to get him with the penultimate pick of the first round. So that is your number eight player. Number seven is Ryan Donato. Now, he's a native of Scituate, played his prep hockey at Dexter Southfield for his uncle Dan Donato. And then, of course, saw little action with the Omaha Lancers, the USHL, at the end of that season, and then spent the last two seasons with his dad, Ted, former Bruin, undersized but plucky winger with just speed to burn out of Catholic Memorial High back in the day. And, you know, Ryan is proving that the apple didn't fall too far from the tree, though. He's bigger than his dad. What's interesting is he gets the size from his mom's side of the family. His uncle, his mother's brother, is a former NFL linebacker. His cousin is a West Point captain of the wrestling team. He's got some good size. He's bigger than his dad. Doesn't skate as fast, lightning quick, maybe as his dad did, but that's because he's bigger, so you shouldn't necessarily expect that. I think he's going to hold up a little better at the pro level. He's going to be able to win some board battles and be more effective in the corners and out in front. But what I really like about Ryan Donato is, A, he grew up around the game. I mean, I remember when he was born in April of 96, the Bruins making that announcement. And then there's a cute photo of him as an infant with Joe Thornton and Sergei Samsonov. I believe it was during the 98-99 season when the Bruins were having their 75th anniversary season. And Ryan's just kind of grown up around the game, with his dad being a pro, an effective pro, kind of a nomadic existence toward the end there. But certainly his coach at Harvard, and it's a hockey family. And he's just a high-end, creative, offensive player. He was absolutely dominant at Dexter. What I liked about him in his draft year is that all these teams would sell out to stop him on any given night, and they were rarely successful. He faced a ton of checking pressure. Guys were taking cheap shots at him, trying to get him to overreact and retaliate, because they knew if they could get him in the penalty box, they stood a better chance of winning because he wasn't on the ice. And he just didn't take the bait. I mean, he's a really disciplined player, smart player, good kid, just bled black and gold growing up, and then got to live the dream of seeing his team draft him in the second round, 56th overall, at the Wells Fargo Center in Philly in 2014. That 2014 draft is shaping up to be what might be one of the greatest drafts in Bruins history if everything continues. We're already getting production out of David Pastrnak, although he has cooled off of late. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better, more impactful first-round pick that year. You've got some impressive-looking players in Donato and another guy that I'm going to mention here shortly that's a little higher up the list. And then Danton Heinen has already seen some games in Boston as well and is very high on the pro list, which I'll recap in a different podcast here this week. Ultimately, Ryan Donato's got a high ceiling. He's a bit raw still. They can afford to take their time. They don't need to rush him in at center, and he can just kind of develop much along the lines of the way it was with their goaltending and Zane McIntyre, who's really starting to come on and show that patience was worth it. I don't think it'll take Ryan Donato as long as Zane McIntyre, but he's one of these players where he'll be worth the wait, and I think fans will certainly be intrigued with him as he's going to probably only continue scoring consistently with the Crimson in Cambridge, and especially with guys like Jimmy Vesey no longer there. The spotlight will be big enough to share with Donato and some of the other players that are picking up the slack, and Teddy Donato's team looks like they could be contending for a spot in the NCAA tournament and maybe even the Frozen Four this year. So that's seven. Let's get to six. So Jakub Zboril was the team's top pick in 2015, 13th overall. He just missed getting into that top tier of defensemen, Noah Hanifin, Ivan Provorov, and Zach Werenski. All three of those guys are in the NHL. Hanifin made it at 18 last season. both Provorov and Werenski are being, you know, providing pretty significant impacts for the Flyers and Blue Jackets, respectively, this year. Don Sweeney kind of talked about it. I think talent-wise, Zboril certainly belonged in the discussion with those three players. Skill-wise, he's right up there. He's got good size. He can skate. He can certainly fire the puck hard. He's got the puck skills to carry it or to pass it to make the long lead passes or the short bullet passes that you know, hit guys in stride, tape to tape, all that good stuff. He's got some nasty, some ability to play a physical game and shut teams down. But the issue with Zboril and why he drifted away from that top tier and why he's gotten some criticism here since the Bruins drafted him, certainly last season and then maybe even lately at the World Junior, as he was kind of exposed in this tournament a bit. And I do have a post coming on him. I apologize. I haven't gotten it up yet. But he's kind of a good cop, bad cop player, where when he's good, he's very good. You can see the ability. You can see the skills and the toolbox that he brings or the tools that he brings. But when it comes to the decision making, I'm not sure that his judgment is, you know, under pressure when the game closes up on him and he doesn't have the time and space. I don't know that his decision making is all that sound at times. I think he's passive and disengaged at times where the effort just doesn't seem to be there and he doesn't seem to be playing as well as he could be. And that's an issue that's been problematic. I mean, a player that is that talented should not have the motivation questions, I think, that have kind of dogged Zboril since his draft year. So I still think he's got something to prove. The more I look at him, the less I think he's your bell cow top one or two defender. I think he could be a solid three if he hits on his potential. But this is more of a complimentary player. And I know some people are going to hear this and go, oh, man, that's, you know, that's a failure. It's not a failure. I mean, you know, I believe Zboril is going to play in the NHL, and he has the ability to be successful. No one should write him off. He was only drafted, you know, a year and a half ago. He hasn't even turned 20 yet. But the thing with him is the other players are performing and raising their stock and developing at a higher, you know, a more rapid pace. And he's kind of making the same mistakes. And so what I would offer to the people that are on the Zboril bandwagon and don't seem, you know, might not want to, you know, entertain some of the criticisms, you know, to just look hard and ask yourself when you see him out there, is he really applying himself to the max of his ability? And I think if you're honest with yourself and you're watching him, you'll answer that question for yourself and say, no, there's probably more he can be doing. He needs to be moving his feet a little more, digging those edges in. You know, there's a lot of times when I watch Zboril and he's just kind of gliding around or he's just kind of standing around. He's watching the puck. He's not fully engaged. And again, if we're being honest with ourselves, this isn't, you know, me being a hater. It's just saying, hey, he's got room to improve. Yet he's sitting six. He's not top five. Again, I'm not going to put a guy into my top five that I don't think is going to be, has the potential to be a top defenseman, or at least a, you know, a top two NHL, potential NHL all-star down the road, you know, after years of development and things like that. And I just don't see that from him, but I still think he could come into Boston and he could contribute and be a good, solid role player because he does bring that offensive element and he is capable of defending. But I just think he's got to improve his consistency of effort. And I'll just tell you, talk to Don Sweeney. He said the exact same thing. So this isn't out of left field. The Bruins know it, and I hope the player knows it. And if we were watching Canada, Czech Republic last night in the World Junior, I think, you know, the fans are kind of maybe looking at that, can look at the film of that game and say, yeah, you know, there were just times when he was a step behind. I don't think the sense of urgency is always where it needs to be, and he was just simply outplayed. I mean, if you compare and contrast him to his own St. John teammate, Thomas Chabot, it's pretty heavily slanted towards Chabot in this tournament right now. So that's the read on Zboril. Again, I'm not completely down on him, and I'm certainly not writing him off, but I think he's got work to do, and it's going to take him some time. He is not ready to come in next year, I'll tell you that much. He is not ready to come in next year and win a spot in this Boston top six. Not the way things are. He would need a major sea change and a turnaround in his play and the way he applies himself in the training camp and the preseason next year to even have a sniff. But the good news is he'll get to play in the AHL next year and they can put him in Providence. And who knows, he could get a call up at some time and maybe establish himself and not look back. But certainly not ready to make a prediction that Jakob Zaborl is going to be in the opening night lineup. And that doesn't make him a failure just because he was the 13th overall pick. Everyone develops on different timelines, but it's certainly food for thought. Okay, moving on to the top five. This player is becoming a fan favorite, and why not? He scored 40 goals a year ago for the Prince George Cougars. Last month in December, signed a 3-year entry-level deal with the Bruins, who rewarded him for his commitment and strong play since they drafted him in the 4th round, 105th overall in 2015. This is a player who is rooting for the Bruins and just hoping and praying that they would take him in the draft. And when they did, it's been a dream come true for him. And now the real dream is to establish himself and make the NHL wearing the spoke be in the black and gold. And that is Jesse Gabriel. This is a player who's, I think I said in the preview in print, he's tailor-made for the Bruins. He's exactly the kind of player they value and covet because he's got decent size. I mean, he's not huge, but he's not undersized either. About 6'1" and you know, over 200. He's very compact and dense muscle mass. He's a freakishly strong guy, real good athlete. At 15, he was deadlifting 450 pounds already. I'll tell you right now, as he's approaching age 20, he can deadlift a heck of a lot more than that. And unfortunately, opponents who have tried to drop the gloves with him have figured that out as he just digs his edges into the ice when he fights and has a real strong base and core and does very well in the fighting. He's one of those players that agitates and gets under opponent's skin and hits really hard, but he can also back it up. I wouldn't call him a heavyweight. You know, he's not one of these feared fighters in the mold of the old classic enforcers, but that's not the NHL anymore. You need guys that can play, skate a regular shift, and if they're tough and can fight, you know, bring it on. And that's Jesse Gabriel, and there's a reason that people are excited about him. Skates well. He's not as blazing fast as a player he's often compared to, which is Brad Marchand. You know, he's not as fast as Marchand, but he's bigger. He can really shoot the puck and laser it, similar to the way Marchand can. He's very good straight off the rush, you know, beating goaltenders over the shoulder with laser beams to the top corner. And he can also slash against the grain, cut across and fake one way and then go the other. Got a deceptive blurry release that puck comes off his stick like a bomb. And he's a tough bugger, and people do not like playing against him. One thing I like about what Gabriel has done this year to improve his overall status is that he has essentially listened to the coaches, and he's taking far fewer penalties. And the bottom line that was made to him was you can't score from the penalty box. And so he's picking his spots better. And I think he's also benefiting from the distance he's created for himself. You know, he's a tough guy, and when he came into the league, I mean, he was kind of yapping and barking, and lots of guys were challenging him. And now he's one of the older players, and people are kind of realizing that it doesn't pay to get Jesse Gabriel riled up. You know, sometimes just, you know, let the giant sleep and hope that he doesn't come alive, because it's not an effective strategy. So he's spending less time in the box, and I think that's translating to his overall play. He was recently banged up with an upper body injury, so he's back on the ice and back in action, but his scoring's tailed off a little of late. I think we'll see him get hot again, though, and he has 19 goals already this year, so added to the 40 last year, he's scored almost 60 goals since the Bruins drafted him. He is your number five guy. And one last point about Jesse Gabriel, very positive, something that Don Sweeney brought up, is last spring when his season ended in Prince George, he contacted the Bruins and asked if he could go and play in Providence. And what was pointed out to him is that he wasn't under NHL contract at the time. And so he would be accepting risk if anything happened and he suffered a catastrophic injury that might potentially impact his future in terms of getting an NHL deal. And I mean, just do the permutations inside your head the ramifications were there. And yet he said, no, understand that. He accepted the risk, signed an amateur tryout with Providence and got some games in. And that really, they really feel like that experience helped him be a better junior player this year. And they respected the fact that he was willing to commit and put the team and his development for the benefit of the team ahead of any potential risk to his personal future earnings. And so there it is. If you're looking for reasons why the Bruins went ahead and made that commitment and signed him here in December rather than letting it go to his closer to his deadline, there you go. And I think both parties deserve credit Gabriel has certainly matured since the Bruins drafted him, and the Bruins are pleased with his progress. So he's definitely a player people can watch with intrigue and a level of growing excitement. So now we're inside the top five. Number four is a player that I mentioned not by name earlier, but when I was talking about the strength of the 2014 draft, and that is Notre Dame right wing Anders Bjork. He was a fifth round pick in 2014. This is a player that the Bruins told me a lot of people felt like he was just kind of a grinding defensive forward. That was based on the role he had at the National Team Development Program in Ann Arbor. And they saw flashes of potential to be something more than that. And they were extremely fortunate to kind of wait and roll the dice a little bit and get him in the fifth round later on. And boy, that decision seems to be paying off in spades. Bjork came into South Bend 3 years ago as a true freshman, played sparingly, but put up solid numbers in his first season there. Really took off as a sophomore last year. Had 35 points in 35 games. He scored 12 goals, and you know, it was a solid performance. And this year, in 19 games, he has 14 goals. So he's already has two more goals than he had all of last season, where he scored 12. But he's done it in 16 fewer games. And he's just one of the bright lights of the NCAA right now. I mean, you know, he's not quite as prolific as a Mike Vecchione at Union, but he's certainly getting his job done, and he's one of the Hockey East's top players. He's got excellent skating speed and agility and short area burst. You watch him, he's a relentless forechecker. He explodes into the puck carrier and creates turnovers. He's extremely smart. He reads the play, so a lot of times he'll anticipate. He'll see where those lanes are, and he'll fill those lanes and intercept passes, and then he's transitioning those turnovers into instant offense. And if he's not scoring the goals himself, he's certainly, you know, springing guys on the fly and putting defenses on their heels. And he's also a real mature kid. There was a recent article that appeared on the Notre Dame website about the commitment he's shown with a young group of school kids in a certain class, and being a mentor and a positive role model for those kids, and that he's given up a lot more time than he ever really was obligated to based on his schoolwork and his coursework. And you know, you just can't say enough about a kid like that. That's gonna go out and he's gonna really, you know, choose to make a positive difference. So the thing with Bjork that always I have to bring up, and because people ask and I've tried to nip it in the bud and it's been better of late, is that as a college player, he's not signed and he can't sign with the Bruins right now, because to do so would mean he would lose all of his remaining eligibility. And so that's not going to happen. And the soonest they can sign him is when his Fighting Irish season is over. But the other lingering question that seems to be following any discussion of Bjork around is that, will he pull a Jimmy Vesey and try to be a free agent? Well, for one, he can only do that after the Bruins have owned his rights 4 years, so that would have to happen. He would have to finish out this year and then go back for his senior year, and he wouldn't be able to pursue that option until August of 2018. So what I would advise people to do is just wait, you know, enjoy the fireworks show for now. He's having a heck of a year. See where it leads, see how he looks. When the season ends, I suspect the Bruins will put on a full court press to sign him. And if they sign him, then there's no, you know, all the concern will be for naught. And then I'm sure fans will move on to the next guy that needs to be signed and be concerned about that. But it'll be over. But if he doesn't sign, then okay. Now we have something to keep an eye on and a discussion to be had, because then he'll have that one more season, senior season, and he could potentially leverage his right in the collective bargaining agreement to be a free agent and do what Vesey did. But for now, it's far too premature to be talking about that. It would be one thing if he was facing free agency this summer, but he's not. My gut feeling is he seems committed to what the Bruins have done. Again, that's just a gut feeling. Just because someone exercises their CBA doesn't mean CBA rights and leverages their ability to choose their destination doesn't mean that's going to work for everyone. So we'll just have to see. And if he rejects the Bruins' overtures, and they will probably have to offer him max money. But if he rejects that, then it'll be a discussion to be had at a later date. And certainly we'll need to start running those contingencies, and the Bruins might need to think about maybe trading Bjork's rights or seeing what they can get. But Right now, it's just far too early for that, and I just think the best thing to do is just enjoy his progress and enjoy his season, because he's really he's probably one of the best draft values, if not the best draft value the Bruins have in the system, and he's just doing so well. But he's a winner off the ice as well, and that certainly bodes well for the character and what has been important to the Bruins in their selection process, whether we're talking about draft picks, free agents, or undrafted players that they've brought in. So our number three amateur player is, and I thought about maybe having Bjork three and this player four, but in the end, hockey guys all kind of come back to the same thing and really like this player, and that's Jakob Forsbacka Karlsson of Boston University Terriers, sophomore. In all likelihood, he will turn pro and sign with the Bruins here in the spring. He's just a tremendous two-way, strong, all-around center. Very good on faceoffs. Don Sweeney compared him to Patrice Bergeron this year. Jay Pandolfo, when I interviewed him last year for the same piece in the New England Hockey Journal, compared him to Patrice Bergeron. He's just, you know, he's not a dynamic, flashy type of player, but he's a powerful skater, gets to point A to B effectively, sees the ice just like he's got 360-degree, panoramic vision, just really smart player. Doesn't make many mistakes, can speed it up, can slow it down. You know, he's not, like I said, he's not this electrifying presence. Like, if you're expecting to be entertained every time he's on the ice, you'll probably be disappointed. But if you're a hockey guy and you understand the nuances of the game and the little things, you know, you look at where his stick is, you look at the way he fills lanes, the way he skates with his head up, and he'll make the right decisions with and without the puck. And he's always kind of around the net and making things happen. Very good passer. He's not gonna fill the net. He doesn't have a particularly overpowering shot, but he is a very good distributor. And I think he seems ideally suited to come in right away and be that third line center for the Bruins in pretty short order. And he's kind of an ideal fit for the third line. And then as he matures and develops, we could see a guy maybe move up to be the second liner one day as other players age out, or, you know, they decline and move on. JFK, I know the Bruins are very excited about him, and he was a solid selection. And, oh, by the way, one more comparison to Patrice Bergeron. JFK was drafted 45th overall in 2015. Bergeron was the 45th overall selection in 2003. So there you go. There's one more little connection between the two of them, but certainly a player to watch. Now we're up to number two, so drum roll again. If you've read the article, anticlimactic, you already know. Zach Stanishin. And I had done a previous version of the podcast that I booted because I just felt like I was going a little too overboard. And I just felt like I was over the top. So I'm going to be a little more clinical in my analysis and just kind of keep it, you know, keep the editorializing to a minimum and just kind of lay it out for Sinishin and what he's done. So when he was drafted 15th overall in 2015, it caused some controversy because he just wasn't projected there. But projected by whom is often the question. And when you look at these public lists, I mean, they're public lists, and every NHL team keeps their lists private. So we don't know what other NHL teams maybe saw it the way Boston did and had him, you know, inside that top 20. But it certainly seems that since the Bruins made that decision, Sinishin has done his part to kind of justify and show that decision was warranted. He's a right wing, he's about 6'2", 6'3", can just flat out fly in the open ice. Very good, powerful stride, and he just will blow by defenders sometimes like they're standing still. Takes pucks hard to the net, great shot, real good soft hands and close. He can handle the puck in tight and beat goaltenders, roof it, put it down, stick side low, fire beams off the rush. You know, pretty much everything you need a scorer to do. The numbers don't lie. He just hit his 20th goal this season in about, I think, 27 or 28 games. So he's on pace again for 40 goals plus in the OHL. He had 45 last year. You know, we're talking about a player who has 65 goals in 94 games since the Bruins drafted him. And when you run those numbers, I mean, who wouldn't want that kind of a player, in their system with that kind of goal-scoring success rate? So he's done very well. The knocks on Sinishin is he's still a work in progress in terms of his overall game. There are times when he's kind of just watching the puck and waiting for someone to get it to him and kind of waiting for his next offensive chance. But he's an eager kid who wants to do well and he wants to learn and he wants to get better. I don't know that he's going to be ready to go right away if he is, more power to him. But fans should be prepared that kind of, again, a slower road with him. He's not going to develop necessarily on this timeline that other successful scorers have. And that creates, you know, pressure. I understand that. You know, Travis Konecny is certainly playing and playing well in Philadelphia. Kyle Connor got some NHL games in. So, you know, you can understand the criticism, but I think, you know, the way I choose to look at it is if you look at his performance and just take his performance alone, he's done well. I can't speak to really to why Team Canada chose not to bring him to Toronto and have him be on that team. He, you know, was not in their program of excellence, and maybe that hurt him in the final selections. I think they certainly could have used his speed and his power coming off the wing against the Americans the other night, but that's all water under the bridge. I think with Sinishin, what's been interesting to see is how well he's played since he went back to the Sioux and played for the Greyhounds after he was cut. You know, he's scoring goals and seems to be letting his play doing the talking. And if you're a fan of the Bruins or you're a member of the Bruins organization, that's all you can expect and all you can hope for. And so he looks fine and looks like he's getting it done. And at some point, if the Bruins could get a strong top six, 30 goal plus upside winger on the right side to go with David Pastrnak, that would be a good thing. So I think he's on track. Don't know whether he'll be there at the beginning next year or he'll see time in Providence. But, you know, if he's not in Boston, he'll be down in Providence, and I think he'll be helping them. I think his goal scoring will certainly translate. That leads us to number one, Charlie McAvoy. Not a surprise. This is a player who just seems to have it all. He doesn't have the NHL height, but he's built like a fire hydrant, extremely thick and strong. You see that when he's, you know, playing the physical game, he kind of gets up under guys. He's got that lower center of gravity and he's very strong on his skates. So he can take a hit and give a hit and absorb that contact and oftentimes get the better of it. He's a very good skater, passer, shooter, aggressively likes to push the pace. I felt he was too aggressive in his draft season. He seems to be getting better and learning. He's still going to make mistakes. What defenseman doesn't? Nico Hischier made him look a little foolish the other night against Switzerland in the quarterfinal. But, you know, Hischier is probably going to be a top three pick in the draft this year. So, you know, the key thing is, you know, our players going to continue to learn and develop and kind of benefit from those experiences of having skilled players go around them. Sure, they will. I don't think there's anything to worry about with McAvoy. We can't make perfection the enemy of good enough, and this is a pretty darn good player. He has a magnetic personality, as Coach Quinn has said. He just works really, really hard and well, and guys like him, and they're drawn to him, and I think he's going to be an excellent fit in that Boston Bruins room. Like JFK, I think this is a player you're going to see sign right away. He's going to be in Boston under contract here as soon as the BU season ends. Don't know when that's going to be. March timeframe is when the Hockey East tournament will take place. And if they qualify for the NCAA tournament and make it all the way to the Frozen Four, we're looking middle of April, which, you know, would limit his ability to come in and play some games with the big team. But I think you'll definitely sign him. And if he signs, anything's possible. We could see McAvoy skating around on the Boston blue line at the end of spring, or they could take their time, maybe have him in Providence, get some games in that way. And maybe he's in the lineup opening night, maybe not, maybe he's back down in the AHL. But either way, I don't think the wait will be long. This kid's just too gifted, talented, big, you know, right shooting defenseman who can provide the offense and the defense. They've learned an important lesson with Brandon Carlo that, you know, if you're a young kid, if you're ready to go and you're able to play at that level, there's no reason to just, you know, hold you back. You know, put you in there, get as much benefit as you can playing with Zdeno Chara as he is in the twilight years of a Hall of Fame, you know, future Hall of Fame career. Wish McAvoy the best. I think he was an excellent pick at 14. BU head coach Dave Quinn certainly thinks so. And unfortunately for the Terriers, they're going to probably lose him pretty quick, but they know that and they'll move on to the next, you know, round of players that are going to help keep that strong legacy going on ComAv. So that's about it. Bruins are looking pretty good. I will, continue this with a pro players, prospect podcast where I break down guys like, you know, Danton Heinen and Zane McIntyre, Jake DeBrusque, and the like, and talk about the future that way. But future looks pretty good for the Bruins. They've done a good job drafting, and we just have to see where it all leads. But hope you've enjoyed this podcast. It's about 45 minutes long, and I think that's long enough. So I will sign off, and thank you, as always, for the support. Don't have my three amigos with me this time, but hope I didn't drone on and you're still hanging in there. For the Scouting Post, this is Kirk Ludeke. Have a great time, and enjoy life, hockey, and whatever pursuits you're with. Wish you absolutely the best in 2017, and I will see you soon. Thanks. Out of here.